From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's July the 11th, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the World Agricultural Outlook Board released its supply and demand tables this morning. It says the U.S. supply of corn for the coming year will be down by a billion bushels, but the demand will only be cut by 300 million with a stocks-to-use ratio of 6.7. The current stocks-to-use ratio is 12.5, according to the USDA agency. It all adds up to a very tight squeeze, getting even tighter over the next 14 months. The nation's corn bin, of course, may look awfully bare by the time we get to the fall of 2009. We'll take that up and much more during today's edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL AM 580. That's public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
On a Friday afternoon, futures in Chicago finished the day like this. Nearby July wheat at $8.19, up 12.5 cents today. September, 8:30¾, up 12¾. And December futures in the wheat pit, 8.55 for the soft red, up 12¾. July corn futures, $6.80, a settlement price 4¾ higher. September at $6.91, up 4.5 cents. And December futures, $7.09¼, up a nickel for the day. March contract, $7.26¾, 5.5 cents higher. July soybean futures up 21 cents at $16.30½. August $16.15½, up 15. And September at $16.05½. Up 12.5 cents for the day. November soybeans, $15.96, 9 cents higher. July bean meal futures at $453.90 a ton, up $8.10. July bean oil at $64.48, that's up 3. August live cattle futures from the CME Group's Mercantile Exchange side for the livestock, $101.20, down 85 cents for the live cattle August contract. October futures, $87.5, lower at $108.57.5. August fed cattle at $111.72.5, down 92.5 cents in the September feeder cattle at $113.70, down 90 cents for the day. July lean hog futures at $74.97, up $1.02.5. The August at $74.65, down 22.5. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets are doing at this hour. August crude oil futures, after climbing to new contract highs, are now trading at $144.15, up $2.50 for the day. September at $145.25, up $2.92. August ethanol futures at $273.7, 2 cents higher. September at $272.3, up 2 3/10. August natural gas, $11.87.6, down 42 4/10. September futures off 44 2/10 at $11.94 1/10. Heating oil futures, diesel fuel that is, $4.07 3/10, up 3 6/10. September at $4.10 9/10, up 3 6/10. August propane is trading today, 193.5 was the final trade, up 2 for the afternoon. July gold futures now, $959.50 an ounce, up $18.60. The August futures at $960.60, up $18.60 on the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average currently stands at 11,110. That's just about 15 minutes delayed on the quote, down 117 points for the hour. The U.S. dollar at 72.05, down 0.44. And the CRB index at 461.28. is up 2.36. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. Mike Sola says tonight across Illinois and Indiana, it'll be partly to mostly cloudy, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Those will increase in coverage after midnight, lows between 67 and 72. Tomorrow, says Mike, partly to mostly cloudy, widely scattered thunderstorms early in the day, increasing coverage and shifting from the northwest to the southeast through the day. Highs will range from around 80 in the far northwestern part of Illinois to 92 in southern Indiana. And the extended forecast says localized flooding will occur this weekend, but is expected to be brief as things should dry out as we enter next week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Leonard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Leonard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us for a look at the futures markets is Mike Zuzulo, Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hey there, Todd.
Let's start by recapping, if you could, what the numbers looked like this morning when they came out from USDA. WASDE numbers and World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates and some wheat numbers were due out this morning from them.
Yeah, we had the corn carryover come in at 833 million bushels. That's a little bit higher than last year and up a little bit from last month as well. The soybeans came in at 140. That's down versus last month by about 35 million bushels or 25 to 35 million. And then the wheat came out at 537. That was up substantially, but all three of those numbers were within the range of estimates. I'd say the wheat number was maybe on the top end or the upper end of the middle part of the range, but overall as expected from a standpoint of the U.S. 08-09 carryover numbers.
And then, as I mentioned at the beginning or the top of this program, I was taking a look at the stocks-to-use ratio last year or the current marketing year that we're in now that will end this fall, a stocks-to-use ratio of 12.5, and we had production and total supply with the carry-in at the beginning and last fall of 14,393,000,000. Expectations for our total usage is 12.795 billion this current marketing year. That gives us a 12.5 stocks-to-use ratio. That dropped pretty substantially. So we went from total supply from a 14.3 or a 14.4 to a 13.3, most of that coming because we have a much smaller corn crop in the field at this time. And then we also dropped, but not as much, our usage down, I think, 300 million as opposed to the billion that we dropped in total supply. So we end up with a really tight stocks-to-use ratio at 6.7. It's not a number that wasn't really unknown, but it's a number that's there in black and white today.
No, I think that's an excellent point. I think your point is very well taken, that especially as we get into this pollination phase and the reproductive phase of the corn, that we really are dependent upon the weather at this point the next 20 days to either close the gap or make that gap even worse. And as I dug deeper into the numbers, it really struck me because the USDA in their front two or three pages of overall summary information noted that the foreign coarse grain consumption in the world accounts for more than half of the rise in the coarse grain usage in the world as a whole. And world coarse grain consumption, they increased this month 3.5 million tons, even as the United States corn usage went down, like you point out. And so it's not unlike crude oil right now and the overall general economy, and I think that's why the crude oil was able to jump late this week. It wasn't just Iran and Israel, but the Department of Energy short-term energy outlook came out and said, look, daily global consumption of crude is going to be up about 900,000 barrels a day. That's including a 400,000-barrel-a-day drop by the United States. So a similar pattern here with corn and fuel right now. And it kind of goes back to what we talked about on Commodity Week with Dr. Good, is have we substantially lost or structurally lost demand here in the corn? Right now, no, that's not the case, and no, not in the crude oil either. We are, in fact, more than offsetting the loss in U.S. demand with the global needs, and I've heard that more than once also in the fertilizer realm as well, where we are having difficulty because of our cheap currency and because of this wealth effect and these other countries wanting to really get up to the level we are in terms of how they bring in their calories. They really are competing effectively with us and against us. So I think the Chicago people saw that later in the day. I think the Chicago people also, or the traders we work with in Chicago, really were hanging on kind of maybe the Informa numbers as a break even for bearish bullish. If we give a 12 billion bushel production, then it's or more, it's bearish. If it's below that, it's bullish, or at least we've taken out enough risk premium with the fact that we're down, you know, $1.04 from high to low as we close out this week.
Yeah, if we got to 12 billion, which is what Informa came out with, but USDA's production number, they lowered actually the Well, how much did they lower the actual yield by half?
They took it down a half bushel, so we're right around 11.715 on production itself. And that's really, I think, the key number is if we move towards 11.5 billion, you're going to get to the point where that stocks-to-use ratio you talk about is going to get very, very key to those analysts out there in the fund community especially.
Well, historically, what is the stocks-to-use ratio? What feels comfortable or has felt comfortable to the trade? So last year, or this year, when we're hitting new contract highs, we're at 12.5. We get half that size at 6.7, or roughly half that size. As we get into next year, what was comfortable in the past?
Well, if you take out the idea of storing, and when the government had storage programs, it seemed like whenever you got above 15% on your stocks-to-use ratio here domestically, and even globally, if you would get up above 16-17%, you're talking about a very heavy market where supply will always be around to be able to meet any increased demand. And that's where traditionally this market has been built upon low prices for several years, bringing demand in, and then that demand stays strong for a couple several years, and then we kill the goose that laid the golden egg by taking prices up too high. It seems right now that this is starting to shift, that this business cycle we're in right now and the way the global economy is set up right now, maybe we are starting to structurally shift this. You know, the jury's still out because we still haven't gone through a downturn with the stock market, proper for 6 or 8 months. But that, it's something to really watch because it's something that Chicago and the fund trade will really keep an eye on here the next 6 months, because we could be right back in the soup like we were earlier this year if we don't come away with a pretty decent pollination.
Well, let's turn around and come back to the point that you made earlier about the 3.5 million tons of world coarse grain consumption. Now, USDA, here's the way the USDA wrote it. World coarse grain consumption 408.09 increased 3.5 million tons as higher expected foreign consumption again this month more than offset the reduced U.S. corn use. So what that tells us, and I'll sum it up in a different way, is that despite the fact that some ethanol plants in the United States are either cutting back or won't come online and usage is expected to be a little less in the United States, coarse grains, barley, corn, those sorts of things are being consumed at a higher rate across the rest of the planet.
That's right, and I think the key here is we don't know yet whether that consumption figure is the other countries padding their supplies that got too tight and too low, and they're worried about food security now and climate change. I think there's some of that going on to where they'll actually buy more than they've been used to buying in the last 5 years because they ran too thin and got too scared and got a lot of social unrest started. And so maybe we're front-end loading some of this demand right now. That's yet to be seen. But, again, something to watch the next 6 months.
All right. So I'm going to stick with the corn because there are some interesting things on the weekly trade. I'll bet you've looked at it already. But July corn, I think I've got this right, down 66 cents this week.
Right.
December corn futures up 11 and three quarters. So there was some spread that happened in that marketplace.
Well, I've got DS08 corn down about 67 and three quarters on the week. Maybe that's that week-to-week thing that you deal with the,
right,
the spot. So, yeah, I mean, on an outright December close, we were down about 67, 68 cents on the December corn. But
I'll take a look. Dave pulled these numbers up,
yeah,
for me, and I know he had them right at one time, but let me pull something up real quick. December on a weekly, I'll bet you're correct. So maybe, because it just seemed awfully odd to me that there would be that kind of spread in that marketplace, and the answer is, yeah, down 67 and three quarters of a cent. You are exactly right, my friend, on the week-to-week.
Well, the interesting thing about the spread, you bring up a good point, because the interesting thing is you've got that no-bean dees corn ratio now up to 2.25, and that would suggest to us, anyway, that if you add weather to the factor of price action, the spread, the ratio, and the weather would say corn and beans are probably going to trend with each other now, as opposed to what we've seen this last week and a half, where they've just completely gone in opposite directions. So we think those row crops are probably going to trend together. That's real important, not just for how you hedge 08, Todd, but also how you look at the 07 cash and whether you market some or not here. And we're going to take the sidelines and not do any cash hedging of 07 and see if we can't get the beans and corn to move up together here as we pollinate.
And finally, I'm going to ask you one other question. Are you doing anything with 09? It seems to me that farmers might be starting to think about that at this point.
We tried. We got some clients into and made a recommendation on buying DS08 corn and selling DS09 corn, and we just took a 25-cent licking today, and it just went completely opposite what it should because the USDA has not made a CRP announcement. And so the answer to your question is no, we're not doing anything until USDA makes a CRP announcement, because there's no real effective way to get it done right now.
I spent a lot of time with corn. Anything you wanted to make sure we did cover that I didn't get to?
Well, I think the beans are real, real crucial here. They've been our leader to the upside. They had a very solid close. We're talking about Argentine blockade starting back up in some areas ahead of their Senate vote next Wednesday. The key here is what we talked about, I think, on Commodity Week again, is the idea that lowering a half a bushel yield on beans is nice, but we may be below 40 bushel yield given what type of crop we have being grown right now. And a lot of people in Chicago would say, yeah, but our August harvested acres numbers are going to come up because corn acres went into beans. I respect that, but I think we've also lost quite a few double crop bean acres because we couldn't get the wheat off in our area of the country. So I think the beans are really still very, very tight, and the trade, I think, is going to respect and buy dips here at this point.
Mike, it's always a pleasure speaking with you.
You too, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. Mike Zuzlow is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us on a Friday afternoon right here on the Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Listening to the Closing Market Report from WILL on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois Public Radio for the farming world. I'm your host, Todd Gleason, reminding you to tune in for Commodity Week on this station or on our website. It'll be posted there this evening by just about 6 o'clock. It's WILLAG.org. Mark Gold of Top Third will be our guest this week. That's Commodity Week, a weekend and weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural markets. Now up next, University of Illinois ag economists have been comparing the profitability of grain farms across the state. I'll have more on what makes an Illinois grain farm economically successful. You might be surprised to learn that the differences between a very profitable Illinois grain farm and one that does not operate nearly so well aren't connected to yield. Well, that's not to say that the most profitable grain farms in the state don't have better yields. It's more that these farms use assets more efficiently, says University of Illinois farm management specialist Gary Schnittke.
They differ a lot is in the cost area, and you'll find that higher profit farms tend to have lower cost. And it's a down the board, but mainly it's located in the power and the overhead areas. A couple of things that we don't see different is prices received. We don't see a large difference in price received between the profit groups. And we also surveyed FBFM fieldmen to get a feel for like the technologies that farms are using, and there's virtually no difference in the technologies that these farms use.
Gary Schnittke is part of a University of Illinois team that analyzed the FBFM, Farm Business Farm Management Records of Illinois Grain Farms. They divided the farms into thirds, most profitable to least profitable, and then tried to discern from the available economic statistics what common characteristics made up those most profitable farms. Overhead and power are the two common themes. Power is easy enough to explain. Schnittke says it's having the right size and number of tractors and combines for the farm. It doesn't seem to matter much whether they're new or used. And while they haven't run the figures to tally this out completely, Schnittke says if a farm is overpowered, usually there's too much power in the harvesting equipment. That's combines and trucks.
Overhead's difficult to put your finger on, but overhead would include, you know, building depreciation, general farm overhead, insurance, things that are difficult to, identify with any one thing. But if you look at more profitable farms, they'd have less of those costs than less profitable farms. So it's that more or less it comes down to budgeting and just, you know, cost control and knowing where you're at and being diligent and in your purchasing practices.
Schnitke says there are wide differences in the amount of profit farms reap across the state of Illinois, but that surprisingly the stats show it's not primarily based on yields. The most profitable farms have the right amount of power and lower overhead costs. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Joining us now to take a look at the cash grain market is Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about cash grain business in your area.
Well, it's been an interesting week. We keep trying to finish up what wheat we do, and in between rain showers blowing through and pretty good humid days and hard getting the wheat to dry down, it's been quite a chore to finish off the wheat. The one thing about wheat harvest, I always say, it makes me appreciate corn.
I saw the numbers, and it looked like the wheat harvest across the nation was pretty good. Was it pretty decent in East Central Illinois?
Pretty decent. The quality so far has been good. It's nice, heavy test weight wheat. Yields, oh, about the same as last year when we were first getting samples in and the test weights were coming in 59, 60 pounds when the wheat was still wet. I thought, wow, we're going to have tremendous yields, but they are, you know, just kind of good, solid average numbers.
Now, in the past, we have had some problems with convergence and deliveries and basis levels, any of those things at this point in place. I think this is the first month, July futures, where the new delivery methods, or at least the new convergent options, are available for that marketplace.
I would say that we are still having convergence problems. When I'm out here at New Crop and I'm bidding $1.60 under the SEP, that looks like a convergence problem to me.
Well, I guess that answers the question. We'll have to call Chicago and see what they're going to do about it, won't we? Or the CFTC, one of the two. They thought they had it fixed, but apparently not. So let's talk about basis levels for corn and for soybeans. Have they been tracking fairly well at this point with Chicago?
Remarkably steady here. I mean, we've seen some overall improvement in basis numbers, switch to the September here in the last couple weeks, but still at historically very, very wide levels. And I think you probably have to look mostly at the nearby slots. You look at new crop basis, there's so much noise thrown in that with working capital problems and just scrambling for financing to carry hedges that I think it's especially wide there. But even if you just track the nearbys where that's not a problem, we're still abnormally wide.
And before we get your numbers for the day, I have one other question. We asked Mike Zuzlo if he was suggesting to producers that they make any 09 sales. Do you have bids that far out, and are people asking about it?
We do have bids that far out. People are asking about it. We haven't purchased any new crop 09 for months, and I think that's just because the basis is so wide, so it's more for informational purposes.
Okay, and your bids for the day?
We are 648 nearby corn, 659 new crop, 1586 nearby, and 1506 new crop.
Bruce, thanks much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is the general manager of the co-op, Ludlow Co-op Elevator's 7 East Central Illinois locations. Comes to us each and every Friday right here on the Closing Market Report. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org. You can listen to Commodity Week. That's our weekend program. It'll be posted after 6 o'clock this evening at WILLAG.org. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with WILL's own Daniel Pounder about the weather forecast for the weekend.
It's National Blueberry Muffin Day. The word muffin first appeared in Britain around the 11th century. But until the 20th century, muffins were not a marketable baked good because of their size. They grew stale too quickly. It's also St. Benedict Feast Day, patron of farm workers. On this day in agricultural history in 1792, the first issue of the Farmer's Almanac was published by Robert Bailey Thomas. The journal contained long-term weather predictions, planting schedules, astronomical tables, astrological lore, recipes, anecdotes, and other stories of rural interest. The journal has been published every year without a break to the present day. By the way, the first issue sold 3,000 copies. That number tripled in the second year of publication. And by the time of Thomas's death, sales had swelled to a 250,000 copies. In 1826, John Fowler was born. Fowler, an English engineer, helped develop the steam hauled plow and several other specialty use plows, including the mold drainage plow shown at the Great Exposition of 1851. Fowler died of tetanus after being thrown from a horse. And in 1987, according to the United Nations, world population hit 5 billion people. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Marker Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Joining us in studio this afternoon is meteorologist Dan Pounder to take a look at the forecast for the Midwest. Good afternoon to you, Daniel.
Good afternoon to you, too.
Tell me about the forecast for the immediate couple of days, please.
Well, for Illinois and Indiana for this afternoon, we can expect some partly to mostly sunny skies. Again, people might have noticed that it's particularly hot and humid this afternoon, more so than what people have been used to over the past few days. We have some fairly modest southerly winds bringing in very warm, moist air from the Gulf. And even we've got a few scattered showers now moving through central Illinois. They're actually just about to hit Champaign. And we can expect some more storm development later this evening, and then partly to mostly cloudy skies afterwards. The storms, we do have, a few scattered showers this afternoon. More development can be expected after midnight. Our highs for today, anywhere between 88 in the north and 94 in the south. For tonight, lows between 67 and 72. And then for tomorrow, more partly to mostly cloudy skies, and more storm development is expected once a cold front begins moving eastward through Illinois and Indiana. It's still a bit off to the west right now. The storms that are developing this afternoon and later this evening, more due to rising motion from surface heating, in contrast to, say, lifting from incoming frontal boundary. But for tomorrow, for Indiana and Illinois, highs between 80 in far northwestern Illinois to 92 in southern Indiana. We actually have a warm front making its way through the two-state area right now. That's partly giving us our warm, muggy conditions. So for Champaign-Urbana in particular, though, this afternoon we do have intervals of clouds and sunshine again. Rain is moving through central Illinois right now, moving over Lincoln and Peoria, getting into Decatur, just about to hit Champaign. High of around 90 today, and winds from the south and southwest, anywhere from 10 to 20 miles per hour. For tonight, becoming mostly cloudy, showers and thunderstorms after midnight tonight, a low of 70. Winds still from the south at 7 to 14. For Saturday and Saturday night, partly sunny skies with more storm development, a high of 87. Winds still staying out of the south. And then a low of 68 during the evening, and perhaps some lingering showers during the evening hours and on into Sunday morning. Otherwise, for the rest of the weekend, partly sunny, less humid, a high of 84 on Sunday, a low of 62. And on Monday, we should get to more pleasant conditions with mostly sunny skies and a high of only 82 once that cold front pushes eastward through Illinois and Indiana.
So kind of a rough period as we go through Friday and Saturday, but once we get through Saturday, Sunday, and Monday start to look pretty nice across the Midwest two-state region. Anything further out to the west that's going to be a dangerous storm at all, or those storms that are coming in sort of a typical storm for the Midwest?
The storms that are coming through, actually, Even no severe thunderstorm watches have been issued for any place in Illinois or Indiana. These are just going to be some very, I should say, quick-moving, perhaps heavy precipitation storms, but nothing in the way of devastating winds or hail or anything like that. This is just going to be heavy precip, very short-lived, fast-moving through the region, so nothing to worry about for this weekend.
Daniel, thanks much.
You're welcome.
Meteorologist Daniel Pounder joining us on the Friday Closing Market Report. You have a good weekend.